You can open your Bibles to Joshua chapter 6, beginning with verse 1. Now Jericho was straitly shut up because of the children of Israel. None went out, and none came in. And the Lord said unto Joshua, See, I have given into thine hand Jericho, and the king thereof, and the mighty men of valor. And you shall compass the city, all you men of war, and go around about the city once, and thus shalt thou do 6 days. And 7 priests shall bear before the ark 7 trumpets of ram's horns, and the 7th day you shall compass the city 7 times, and the priests shall blow with the trumpets. And it shall come to pass that when they make a long blast with the ram's horn, and when you hear the sound of the trumpet, all the people shall shout with a great shout, and the wall of the city shall fall flat down, and the people shall ascend up, every man before him. And Joshua the son of Nun, verse 6, called the priests and said unto them, Take up the ark of the covenant, and let 7 priests bear 7 trumpets of ram's horns before the ark of the Lord. And he said unto the people, Pass on and compass the city, and let him that is armed pass on before the ark of the Lord. And it came to pass, when Joshua had spoken unto the people, that the 7 priests, bearing the 7 trumpets of ram's horns, passed on before the Lord, and blew the trumpets, and the ark of the covenant of the Lord followed them. And the armed men went before the priests that blew the trumpets, and the reward came after the ark, and the priests going on and blowing with the trumpets. And Joshua commanded the people, saying, You shall not shout, nor make any noise with your voice, neither shall any word proceed out of your mouth until the day I bid you shout. Then you shall shout. In verse 20, So the people shouted when the priests blew the trumpets, and it came to pass when the people heard the sound of the trumpet, and the people shouted with a great shout, that the wall fell down flat, so that the people went up into the city, every man straight before him, and they took the city. We have been studying the revelation, really, of this book of Joshua, which reveals to us, shows us, exemplifies for us the reality of what it means to be delivered from bondage, the sin that rid our lives and caused us such grief over and over again throughout the years you've been alive. Sin has plagued you, plagued me. Deliverance comes through salvation, through that deliverance we see pictured in Egypt as we're brought out like they were from that place of sin. And it's been a great journey. It's been a great experience watching how the Lord pictures that for us in his word. And when the people were delivered out of Egypt, and as they entered into this place called the Promised Land, crossing over the Jordan, as we've been looking at, two things had to happen. They were the same thing, but they both had to happen when that experience took place. Because deliverance, folks, whether you're being delivered from sin or being delivered into the Promised Land, the Spirit-filled life, both of those experiences require something to take place, and that is the Passover had to be celebrated. The blood of Jesus is the means by which the deliverance took place, correct? That is where we understand that we are saved. We understand that without the blood, there is no deliverance. No deliverance from, from sin. There's no freedom from the bondage of sin without the blood. So, we understand that as they departed from Egypt, they had to celebrate Passover. It was what kept them from experiencing death there that last night in Egypt. And your last night in Egypt, that blood covered you so that you would not have to go through the rest of eternity in death. And when they entered into the Promised Land, as we looked at not too long ago, they crossed over the Jordan, but as soon as they had and dealt with that place called Gilgal, the place of the flesh, then they had to eat Passover again, didn't they? Because it's going to be Passover from then on that's going to be the cleansing agent for their life in the promised land. So communion is experienced, isn't it? In the promised land, we experience that wonder of communion. It reminds us that we are saved. It gives us the ability once again to lock onto and to engage in the power that comes through the blood. So, commemorating Passover, important because it's the blood that delivers, guys. And whenever you're experiencing anything in this life, no matter what it is, you can't leave out the blood. You cannot forget the sacrifice that was made for you. It's the power. The Bible tells us that we're not to be ashamed of the gospel of Jesus Christ because it is the power of God unto salvation. It's the power of God. So you can't leave that out if you want to experience the power. And many people forget that. And they want power, but they forgot the blood. They forgot about Jesus. So the children of Israel have finally crossed over the Jordan. And here they stand on the promised land. They've dealt with the flesh at Gilgal, as we looked at a couple of weeks ago. And now here they are, ready to start their new life. The spirit-filled life, the abundant life is at hand, and they're ready to engage. And it looks like it's going to be an awesome time. Hey, we've crossed over. We've dealt with the flesh. We're ready to start our abundant life. But wait a minute. Right in the way, right dead center in the way of this rich, spirit-filled life, something is lurking. Jericho is there. Jericho, this fortified city with walls that archaeologists tell us could have been as high as 30 feet tall, 12 to 15 feet thick. These aren't just walls, you know, that you'd put up around your yard, unless you got a lot of money. These were big walls, thick walls, huge walls, and they were shut up tight. The gates were shut. The bars were crossed over the gates. There's no way in, and nobody was going in or out of this place. And there it stood, a city, Jericho, lurking there. And I'll tell you, so many people are baffled by this experience, this story, because here we see, hey, the spirit-filled life's at hand. We've already crossed over. That means we're ready to just start enjoying our spirit-filled life. Right? Yeah. And that's what this really means. What? Jericho? What is Jericho anyway? Jericho pictures spiritual strongholds, fortresses in your life, fortresses in the world that are there, that are kind of held in bondage by the enemy. They're his territory. They're his little fortresses, strongholds he has. He's got them all over the world, folks. He's got them all over your life. He's got them all over this town, all over this coastal region we live in. He's got strongholds everywhere. And that's what Jerichos are. But people get confused. They say, wait, I want to enjoy the spirit-filled life. But then there's a Jericho right there. Right. It's supposed to be there. It is? Yeah. You see, people don't understand. This is what the spirit-filled life is all about. Jerichos, Ai's, which is the next little town, as we'll see in the story. All these places that the children of Israel are going to conquer and take over. That's what the spirit-filled life is about. If you don't want to deal with Jerichos, you should have stayed on the other side of the river. What are you saying? That the spirit-filled, abundant life, this life of the spirit, is all about fighting Jerichos? Yep. You see, Jesus, when he told the disciples that the spirit was going to come upon them, that promise of the Father that was going to be upon them shortly and would come upon them at Pentecost, he told them that that power was for a purpose, right? To be witnesses unto me, he said. That was the reason for the power. So that there would be an abundant amount of spiritual power to overcome. The gates of hell will not prevail against this church, Jesus said. That's why the power was given. Oh, I know, you want to believe that the spirit-filled life is just, you know, laying around and soaking up the sun, you know, and just singing songs, you know, kumbaya, all that. And it can be partly that. I mean, we enjoy that part of it. But listen, folks, you're missing it if you have not yet engaged in a good Jericho or two or 10 or 100. Oh, wait a minute now. Sounds like a tough deal. It is a tough deal unless you're empowered. If you are empowered, then this is going to be real exciting, because there's nothing like victory over strongholds of sin spiritually. Nothing. Nothing like it. Nothing fulfills you. Nothing makes you just feel excited and vibrant and alive like taking victory over something that's bound you up or bound somebody else up or binding the world up. Jesus said, loose it here on earth. You know what will be loosed in heaven? Loose it. Free it. Go ahead and do it by the power of the Spirit, you see. And people go, oh, well, don't know about that. That's what we're to do. That's what this is going to be picturing for us. It's rich, you see. Now listen, folks. This is what the power is for. Victory. God is full of grace and mercy, but he never, ever in his word promises you or me that there's going to be freedom in this life from challenges. Now, when people think that, they're in for some real disappointing times. If you think the spirit-filled life is going to be just this free from challenge kind of a place where you never have to experience any difficulty, then you're really sadly mistaken. It's going to be, in fact, the most challenging time of your life. Well, I didn't sign up for that when you told us to go across. I just wanted some easy times, you know. I wanted to just kick back. Well, then you should have stayed on the other side. Because this is a place where you don't kick back. This is a place where you get it in gear. Start taking victory. Battles are won. Not only are we not promised no challenges, but we are promised in the scriptures persecution, trials, and trouble if you're going to live godly. So that's the promise. But the other side of the promise is that you'll have victory with the power of the Spirit. So, you know, you can't have both ways. If you want it easy, you're never going to get it. But if you want to pretend that you have it easy, then you have to disengage. If you want a tough challenge with victory, then you're in the right place. You're sitting and standing on the promised land. That's the right place to be. Now, should this bum me out? No, not at all. Should this cause me to be kind of disconcerted and weary and, oh, brother, and saying all those things? No, because when there's big strongholds like Jericho represents, a big fortress, something that really is strong in appearance, then what that means to me is that the victory that's going to come is going to be big. You see, this gets exciting for me. I start looking at the big challenge. I start looking at the big issue and I think, hey, it's going to be a big victory. The bigger the challenge, the bigger the victory. The bigger the problem, the mightier the battle will be won. And this is something you can start getting excited about, because God has a plan. and a purpose for you, you see, in this thing. And it simply means, folks, that just because you've crossed Jordan doesn't mean the battle is over. In fact, for many of us, it's just beginning. Why? Because for some, perhaps for many, we've never fought before. In the wilderness, the children of Israel really didn't experience much victory, did they? Because it was a place of dryness and weariness, and they wandered endlessly, complaining a lot, murmuring a bunch, and never really experienced much in the way of victory. That was the lifestyle for you, perhaps, as well. Oh, there's a lot of talk. There's a lot of mumbling and grumbling. There's a lot of complaining and issues that are coming up. You're always on the defensive, not only to people, but the enemy. You're always kind of looking over your shoulder, making sure that the enemy's not beating up on you too bad. In that condition, you see, is where the children of Israel had lived for their entire life up until this point. So the fighting hadn't ended when they crossed over. It began there. And for you, this is the place where it begins, not ends. In other words, now's the time to engage in the battle, because really, frankly, folks, you probably haven't been engaged all that much yet. And for some, you've never been engaged. Well, what do you mean? I've been a Christian for 30 years. Doesn't mean you've been fighting. Doesn't mean you've been in the battle. You could have been in the wilderness for 30 years, wandering around like I did for so long, like you perhaps still are. I don't know. The point is that unless there's spiritual victory just being won again and again and again, then you haven't began to fight yet. And the fight is just about to start. And Jericho's picking a fight with you today. He's picking a fight with me. Because they crossed over the Jordan, and there it stood, this big fortified city, looming over them, saying, go ahead, make my day. Go ahead, I dare you, you know. And the Bible tells us here in the first couple of verses that the people were scared. Why? Because they shut the city up. The gates of hell were shut tight. But Jesus said what? The gates of hell will not prevail against my church. My empowered church, the gates of hell won't prevail against it, you see. But these gates were shut up tight. They were boarded up. Don't come in. They were scared. Satan's scared of empowered people. Period. So the fight is going to begin, because even though Satan's scared of empowered people, he believes that if he can taunt and pick a fight with you, you'll turn and run and not storm what he has a stronghold over. And it works a lot of the time. Satan says boo and Christians run. But not today. Not in this story. Not on this battlefield. That's not going to happen. And I'm praying that you're going to make that commitment today. Not today. Not on this battlefield. God's going to get the victory in this story. So here's the thing. What does a Jericho mean to me personally? It could be a lot of things. It could be something that you've been carrying since childhood that you can't seem to shake, some kind of tendency, maybe a character trait, something in you that keeps plaguing you. Oh, you're saved and you've given your heart to the Lord, but there's just stuff or something maybe in your life that you just can't get rid of. It plagues you, haunts you. You can't seem to shake it. It could be something outward. It could be a situation in your life. It could be a relationship. It could be, you know, a situation in your workplace. It could be something else. It could be physical conditions. It could be all kinds of stuff. But the Jerichos are big, and that's the point. These aren't little things. These aren't little tidbits. These are big issues. This is something that you can't deal with, and you know it. There's something there within you. There's something there around you. There's something in your life or in your life inwardly that causes you a great deal of grief. And it's strong. It's a satanic stronghold that will not let you go. And everybody's got them. And it has to fall. It has to go. And this is where it happens. This is where it's going to happen, folks. It's what keeps you from doing what God's will is for you. And you know when that happens. I know I should do this. I know I should be about that. But I just don't do it. What is that? What is it? What is it that keeps me from doing God's will? It's a Jericho. It's a stronghold. It's fortified. It's potent. It's got thick walls. Can't break it. Can't get through it. Can't knock it down. So how do we overcome Jericho? Well, it's not like you think. And this has been the problem for many of us. We've tried to deal with the Jerichos in our life in the wrong way. And the way that you deal with Jericho is not how we often try to deal with Jericho. The story tells us that the people were to compass the city round about. First, the priests or the armed men, the soldiers, the men of war were to go around the city, and then followed by the priests with the ram's horns, which they call trumpets, but they're really these shofars, these ram's horns that you just simply blow into. They don't make much music. They just make kind of some noise. And then the Ark of the Covenant was to be carried through the midst of the people around the city. And then the rest of the folks, all the people, everybody, listen, everybody marched. Everybody marched. You see, there's no exclusions in this story. So if you're sitting here thinking, yeah, he's talking to somebody else because I don't have any Jerichos. I got saved when, you know, I was 12 and I don't have any Jerichos. No, no, no. No exclusions. Everybody marches around Jericho. All of us have Jerichos to march around. I don't care who you are. And this is the thing. They were all to march around. They would march around once, and they did that for 6 days. But then on the seventh day, they marched around the city 7 times. And then as they finished the 7th round about the city on that 7th day, then the priests blew on their horns, on these trumpets, so to speak. And after the people heard the long blast of the horn, then they all shouted at the same time. And then the idea was is that the walls would fall flat. That was the plan. Only Joshua really knew the whole plan. He didn't tell everybody else the whole plan. He just told them that we have to march. He didn't tell them what was going to happen. Why? Would you? Would you tell the people? Okay, see the city? See it? It's really fortified. It's big. The walls are thick. Here's what we're going to do, guys. We're going to march around the city. And then we're going to march some more. And we're going to march and march and march. And we're going to march and march and march and march. And then finally, the trumpets are going to blow and we're going to scream at the wall. And it's going to fall over. Now, would you tell that to the people? No indication that Joshua did. He knew what was supposed to happen. But all the people knew was that they were to just march. And he would tell them when to shout. But it doesn't say that he told them that the walls were going to fall flat. He knew that. He was told that. But the people didn't. So that's the plan. And it's interesting because even though the people inside the city were afraid, don't you think that they were probably poking some fun at these people marching around their city day after day? Don't you think after a couple of days, the people inside the gates standing on the wall, looking down on the people, don't you suppose they were starting to make fun of them? What are you guys doing? March, 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 march. Ooh. You know, as the horns blew, you know, whoa, that's scary. Don't you think that the people inside were kind of wondering, what are they doing? These people are nutty. I mean, they don't even have any weapons. You know, they're just there marching around. Everybody, even the little kids and the old women, they're all just walking around the city. What's wrong with them? And I'm sure they poked fun and made, you know, jokes about what they were doing, don't you think? But it's amazing to me. Every time God tells me something I need to do, the enemy always ridicules me. Always. He always makes fun of me when I obey God. March around the city. Okay. And the enemy, loser, you know, what are you doing that for? That's dumb. He always does that. Don't you know that by now? Why are we surprised when we're obeying God and the enemy comes and says, that's dumb, that's silly, what are you doing that for? We should know better by now. Anything that God does is foolishness to the world. The world can't make any sense of what God does. And they couldn't make sense, I'm sure, of what these people were doing. But you know, the victory was won without the children of Israel doing anything impressive militarily. Nothing. So how was that battle won? Well, Hebrews chapter 11, verse 30. You can look it up later if you like. But Hebrews chapter 11, verse 30 says, by faith the walls of Jericho fell after they were compassed about 7 days. By faith the walls fell. Not by military strategy or might. Not by some kind of maneuver or some kind of impressive idea. They fell, those walls fell by faith. And you see, the Jerichos in my life, in your life, folks, aren't going to fall by some kind of strategy of yours. It's not working harder at it. It's not saying, oh yeah, that's a stronghold, that's an issue in my life, I will defeat it. I'll be stronger, I'll be better, I'll do a good thing here and there, and that'll help make up for that thing, and maybe after a while I'll beat it back. But what happens? You never defeat it, do you? It's never defeated. Because it won't be knocked over by some kind of strategy of yours or some maneuver that you can come up with. By faith, it says, the walls of Jericho fell. Well, what kind of faith causes walls like that to fall down? What kind of faith does it take? I mean, I have faith, don't I? Well, Jesus said if you had faith, you'd be throwing mountains into the sea. Well, that's encouraging. You see, we don't have any faith. We don't possess it. Faith is a what? Gift from God. That is not of yourselves, Paul says, lest any man should boast, lest you start thinking that you have faith. Oh, that's what it is. I know how my walls are going to get knocked down. Ha ha. Because I have faith. Thank you very much. I have faith. That's right. My faith will knock down any wall. Your faith won't even amount to the grain of a mustard seed. If it did, you'd be throwing mountains into the ocean. So what kind of faith do you have? Well, it's down in the protozoa range. It's that microscopic, you know, little blip that you can't even see with one of those huge microscopes, you know. It's so small that it doesn't really amount to anything. Well, then what are you saying if it takes faith to move that wall from where it is to the flat spot, to knock it down flat and annihilate it? And then if that's what it takes, then what are you saying? I don't have it. Is that what you're saying? Yes. You don't have it. Have a nice day. No. Go with God. No. No. If that was the case, we'd be going, oh, bummer, because Jerichos are all over the place, aren't they? But here's the good news, folks. This is the kind of faith. First of all, Paul tells us in Galatians that we are living now by the faith of Jesus Christ. You see, the difference between being a lost sinner in the world and being a born-again believer is that you now live by the faith of Jesus Christ. It is no longer I that live, Paul said, but it is Christ that lives in me. And the life that I now live, I live by the faith of Jesus Christ. If your Bible says in, it's wrong. King James says it's the faith of Jesus Christ, not in. Jesus Christ does not expect you to overcome Jerichos. He knows there's only one thing that we're really good at, and that is failing. So he doesn't expect us to overcome. But he expects to overcome. It is that faith, Jesus said, that overcomes the world. Whose faith? Mine? No. Yours? Certainly not. His. He knows. Because faith is that certainty, you see. It's the knowing for sure, even though you don't see. It's knowing without a doubt, even though you can't really figure it out. And I cannot see how my Jerichos will fall. But I know they will, because it's not up to me. My faith is not about me, it's about Jesus. He knows how to make them fall. Joshua, who's a picture of Jesus, he knew how the walls were going to fall. He was the only one that knew. But he knew how they were going to fall, even though the people didn't. And you see, folks, it's the faith that comes through this ordeal that we've just looked at. Notice in the story how many times seven is used. It's the completion. It's the completed faith that will knock down the walls. It's the one who has the faith. It's God's faith. It's his completed purpose. It's what he's doing that's going to knock the wall down. And I just have to trust in that. Not in me, not in figuring it out, you see. So you might say, what's my role? I'll tell you what your role is. March. Persistence. Keep going. Don't give up. Don't throw in the towel. Don't say, oh, it's over. Don't say, well, I'll just quit marching. I'll quit walking. They marched 13 times around that wall, looking silly. So often like we do. We just keep marching along, you know. People make fun of us. Well, you guys are nutty. Yeah. Where are you going? I don't know. It's marching along, you know. We're just marching along. And we keep going, you see, because they walked around and around with no explanation as to what was going to happen. What day is this? I don't know. What are we doing? Marching around the wall. Do you know when it's going to happen? No. We're just marching. And they had to just march and march. And they didn't know what was going to happen. And it's hard, isn't it? Isn't it difficult to just keep going when it seems like nothing is happening? When you're trying to fight a Jericho, when you're trying to deal with life, when issues are coming at you, isn't it difficult just to keep going when you don't see anything happening? He's never going to get saved. She's never going to change. This is never going to come to an end. Nothing's happening. Isn't it difficult just to say, well, I'm just going to keep going though. I'm going to keep marching. I'm going to keep walking because, hey, I don't know what's happening, but the Lord does. It's difficult to do that. They just had to follow directions over and over and over again. Do you ever feel like that? The Lord just says, obey me. Oh, again, Lord, I don't see anything happening. Just obey. And we have to do that again and again and again, like they were doing. Joshua said, time to go. Let's get up and march. Again? Is there something going to happen today? Is anything going to take place today? And they get done with the march and they go back to their camp and they sit there and go, well, nothing happened today. We marched again. Difficult. It's persistence, though. It's keeping on with the march, folks. That's crucial for you and me. Oh, you're not accomplishing anything with the march. I mean, what was the march accomplishing? Nothing. And this is something I realized a long time ago. My life accomplishes nothing. But his life, his purposes accomplish a great deal. We might look at this story and say, why didn't the Lord just say, okay, walls, fall, and save all the marching? We're going to get to that in a minute. So persistent faith, keep going, keep trusting, keep walking. Also, verse 10 tells us it had to be silent faith. While they marched, Joshua told them, don't make any noise. This would be different for them, wouldn't it? Remember the wilderness wanderings? They were anything but quiet. They made all kinds of noise, complaining and murmuring about everything. Well, this march, oh brother, here we go again, you know. Joshua said, no noise. In fact, no word will come out of your mouth until I tell you it's time to shout. This is even more difficult than just keep marching for some. Just be quiet. Just be quiet while you walk. That's a toughie. We can't even talk about how silly this is. We can't even tell each other how hard this is to keep walking all day. You see, we are so conditioned for this, folks. We just long to tell somebody how rotten things are. We can't wait. Some of you can't wait to get around other people. Some of us just long to get in the presence of somebody. Well, let me tell you about how this is terrible. Joshua said, keep your mouth shut while you walk. Ouch. That's hard. Don't talk about it. I want to talk about it. It makes me feel better. No, it doesn't. It really doesn't make you feel better. It just makes the other feel worse, the person you're talking to. It doesn't make you feel any better. It just causes the other person to feel kind of crummy and discouraged. Well, what are you saying? Now we can't tell each other how we're doing? Be careful. Oftentimes, noise and words from our lips are poor mouthing what God is doing. Because frankly, folks, we don't know what he's doing. And if you don't know what he's doing, keep quiet about it. Because you're probably wrong in your estimation of what's going on. It's wrong. You don't have it right. You haven't figured it out. You're not the person in the know. Oh yeah, I've got it figured out. Here's what he's doing. No, you don't know. So Joshua said, keep quiet about it. There are times to keep quiet. There's times to shout. And when the people, listen, when the people kept quiet when they were supposed to, and when they shouted when they were supposed to, then the walls fell down. That's the way it works. I quietly walk with the Lord. What are you doing, Lord? I don't know. But I'm not going to poor mouth you by telling people how rotten this is, how hard this walk is, how silly this seems, or how unfair this might be. I'm not going to do that. But when you're done with this in 7 days, when it's completed, when it's over, I will shout. That's when I'll open my mouth. It's a good word for some. Maybe we should only open our mouths when we're ready to shout praises and victory that God has accomplished. I'm not saying what he hasn't done or how it's not worked out. So, persistent faith, silent faith, and then appropriate faith. You see, the Ark of the Covenant was in the middle, in the center of the procession. The Ark of the Covenant, which is the representation, the symbol of God's presence with the people. It was in the middle. You see, it's faith in him. It's faith in Jesus. It's the faith of Jesus, literally. The faith that I cling to. It's in the middle of everything for me. It's in the middle of this procession. It's right there in the center of it all. It's all about him, you see. It's not a formula. In fact, you'll never see the children of Israel do this again. It wasn't like when this victory was won, they turned to each other and went, ha-ha, okay, now we got it. It's marching around the city and shouting. That'll do it every time. Uh-uh. They didn't do it again. God didn't tell them to do this again. Why? Because God's not into formulas. He's not into methods. He's not into prescriptions, recipe cards, whatever you want to call it. He's not into that. He never does it the same. He always does it different. So we don't get hung up on trying to do it this way or that way. It's not about the way they did it. It was just a means. God could have done anything. He could have said, okay, now stand on your head, flip over 4 times, and then, you know, blow on the wall and it'll fall over. Okay? In other words, it wasn't the march or the shout. It was God. And in the middle of the procession, the ark marched around. In fact, verse 11 points out very clearly that the ark marched around the city with the people. You see, the presence of God was marching with them. That's the idea. When you can keep going, when you can keep quiet, and when you can just see that God is with you in your presence, in your midst, folks, that is when you're in the promised land. And there's going to be a spiritual victory right around the corner when you can keep going and keep quiet. And know that God's presence is with you. You're on the right march. You're walking rightly. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. But without him, I can do nothing. Without the ark in the midst, without his presence there, it wasn't going to happen, you see. So why do they have to do all this? Why? Why do we have to do all this, people say? Why do I have to do this march? Why do I have to go on this walk? Why do I have to be in this life? Well, for one thing, you're extremely blessed to be alive. You're going to heaven someday. And shame on us when we ask that question. You were created to worship God and be with him forever. And he loves you dearly. But to answer your question, why do we have to march like this? Why did they have to go through all that? I believe they needed to see how impossible it was. Why march around the city day after day after day? I mean, what are they looking at when they're marching? Those walls. As they marched around, they looked up at those walls, huge. Do you think those walls got smaller as they marched? Mm-mm. I bet they looked bigger every day. Huh? Look at that. I didn't notice that before. Huh? Wow. Do you realize those things are about 15 feet thick? Look at the iron on the gates. They marched around day after day, I believe, for that purpose, to see that this is never going to be possible. We're never going to be able to knock these walls down. We're never going to get it done. They needed to see the situation was utterly hopeless for them. What does that mean for me? What does that mean for us? It means this, folks, the Jericho in your life, the Jericho in my life, must be too big for me. Has to be too big for me. I have to look at it again and again. On this march, I look at the Jerichos. I look at that thing. I see the problem. I see the issue. I see who I am. I see the character flaws. I see the things that creep in. I see the things that come at me. And I look at them and I have to know that it's too much for me. And I have to come to that place because unless God supernaturally intervenes here, I am not going to be able to overcome. Why do you have to know that? Well, for one thing, because it's true. And for another thing, it destroys pride. It rips, shreds, and annihilates the pride of my heart. Takes it down to the ground. It leaves me utterly helpless. Well, that's not a good place to be, Pastor. What in the world do you want us to be there for? Because until you're there, you cannot experience Jericho falling. As long as you've got something figured out, as long as you've got some kind of potential within yourself, as long as you've got some kind of thing that you've got going on, as long as you've got some kind of gifting or some ability or some personality, whatever it might be, as long as you've got anything that you think is going to overcome some kind of Jericho in your life, you'll never overcome it. God never entrusts, in my opinion, spiritual power or victory or blessing to anyone until he brings them to this place where they understand how hopeless it would be if he did not step in. And it's true. It's so true. If it's not for God's power and might, we are utterly, hopelessly doomed, lost. There would be no victory whatsoever. And see, folks, the answer to your Jericho is so simple. It's on your knees before your God, confessing to Him as you quietly continue on daily, every day. Get up and march quietly until Jesus says, now. Shout until you realize that He is the one and only source of that power. Then you'll never overcome those Jerichos in your life, ever. There just won't be victory. The victory will come when you know that God is the victor. And you and me, we're just utterly helpless. We're just helping. I picture what Jesus was saying when he told the disciples, unless you are like one of these little children, I just picture Jesus holding a little baby that couldn't do anything for himself. And Jesus said, don't hinder these from coming to me. Such is the kingdom of heaven. These are what the kingdom's made of. And we look at that and we think, babies? Babies. Helpless. Can't do a thing. Totally reliant and dependent on their Father in heaven. It's a good thing to know. Because as soon as you know that, you'll understand that God's power can take and knock down any Jericho in your life. And then, He gets the glory. You can't do it. Because if you could, you would get the glory. And I know all too well, if we could do it, we would not only get the glory, but we'd take the glory. We try and steal a little glory here and there anyway. Imagine if you could actually do something. We don't have to pretend, folks, that we've got ability. In fact, the fight begins and the Jerichos get knocked down when we confess that we don't have any ability and that without God's power upon our lives and moving through us, we have absolutely nothing. The Jerichos will fall as soon as you get on your knees and confess that.